We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
It's 2:42 here on the Afternoon Magazine, and for the next few minutes, we're going to talk about books, but not books made out of paper and cloth bindings. These are books online, which for the past several years, well, I guess more than 30, if we go back to the very beginning, have been provided through Project Gutenberg. And this has been a long-running project of Michael Hart of Champaign-Urbana. And Michael, you got this. This did start in 1971 when I guess we didn't even call it the Internet, and a lot of people didn't even know the Internet was there.
Well, in 71, there were only about 100 people on the Internet, and you could have actually crashed it just by sending something as short as a Declaration of Independence to all 100 of them.
And what did you decide to do at that point? Why did you do it?
They gave me $100 million and said, do something. And I sat there and I'm thinking, okay, I am not going to be the world's greatest programmer. I know that whatever I write in a way of programming and things like that, it's not going to be around 10 years from now. And I wanted to put something in there that would stay in there forever. And this was the build-up to the bicentennial celebration. They had all of these history of democracy displays on the hallways, and it just so happened that on my way into the computer that day, I stopped for a snack, and with my snack, they threw in a copy of the Declaration of Independence. So the light went on over my head, and I said, if I'm going to put something on the Internet that should last there forever, the Declaration of Independence would be a great thing, and it'll always be there.
So the Declaration of Independence went on the Internet at that time. Is it still there in that form?
Well, back in those days, we didn't have lowercase, and we didn't have very many punctuation marks. So we did upgrade it when they invented lowercase for computers, and we changed some of the commas and the semicolons and things like that when they became available. But basically, the words are the same, and you could actually read that paper tape I typed in 71. You could actually read that on a modern computer. It would come out all in caps, but you would be able to read it.
When did you have the idea then of, or did it develop later, of having this repository online for books that people, anybody could get hold of?
It kind of came to me full-blossomed. They told me that day that we were on the Internet. They said, you can send something to Berkeley and Harvard at the same time. And I said, great, we should send something really important, and we should send something that will stay there forever. I had gone through the whole tubes to transistor hi-fi revolution, and I told them about laptop computers back in 1971. And, of course, they thought I was absolutely stark raving mad. And I said, oh, no, I'm going to put Shakespeare and the Bible on the computer. And my brother's best friend who ran the computer there said, not on my computer, you're not, because that would have filled up both hard drives on this multi-million dollar computer and then some. We had 2 5-megabyte hard drives on the whole thing, and the rest was all these big tapes you see in the old-fashioned movies.
Today, Project Gutenberg, and it's the web address is projectgutenberg.net.
Actually, it's gutenberg.net.
Gutenberg.net. Thank you. And that's one T, if it's a little fancy on spelling that.
G-U-T-E-N-B-E-R-G.
Is now a place where you can download, you said you reached the 8,000 mark recently.
Officially, we released them all on Wednesday at noon, and we had 8,021. And as I left to come over here, I checked, and we had 8,036.
Now, these are public domain books. You're not going to find
mostly.
You're not going to find mostly bestsellers from the last half century.
We have 100 new copyrighted ones that we have permission for, maybe even 200. But out of 10,000 that we're looking for, that's not a very great percentage.
I know from I went on earlier today, and I just looked at a couple of books just out of random. It was Grimm's Fairy Tales and Charles Dickens' Great Expectations. And they're both there, easy to find. I can scroll down the entire Great Expectations. I know it took forever to read it in high school, but it took
me forever.
But it's all there.
Every word. And it only takes you a couple seconds to download the entire book, and you can keep it forever, copy it, give it to your friends. In fact, Dickens is right up there at the top of our most downloaded authors.
Now, when you first started doing things, say in the 1970s and in the 80s, someone was just typing these things in.
I was. And we had to type them on teletype machines. It was very slow. You could type about 13 characters a second, and that was about as fast as you could go, or it would skip the characters. And when you sent the book to somebody else, it went at 13 characters per second. So you could really bog down the Internet in those days by sending any modern file today.
What was the first complete book that you typed in?
Alice in Wonderland.
Alice in Wonderland. And and that's certainly still there in the collection.
That's kind of our flagship book. Before that, we had stuck pretty much to this whole freedom of democracy thing as we went through 1976 and the whole 200th year celebration for the whole revolution. And we went through a lot of those, the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, the Federalist Papers, some inaugural addresses, the Gettysburg Address, things like that. Those were all short because the mainframe operators just wouldn't allow anything that was large. These things, as easy as they are to deal with now, you have to realize how hard they were for computers to deal with back in the day.
Now, you brought in this is a DVD over here?
This is our very first official Project Gutenberg DVD. And it has every book that we did up until in the 7,000s. We just hit 8,000, and this is a rewritable one. So I'll be able to just toss it in and upgrade it, and it'll have all 8,000. And I can bring you the same disc in December when I hope I'll be telling you that it's got 10,000 books on it.
Now, that's the jump we've made from one book that would clog up a computer to 8,000 books and more on one little plastic disc.
You can buy for 88 cents a blank DVD and copy this disc I have in my hand.
And you can go to Gutenberg.net and copy this stuff down, and that's okay.
That's exactly what we're there for. It's all free. You just say, Tom Sawyer. And literally, blink of an eye, you're going to be reading Tom Sawyer, and it'll all be there. You can put it on a floppy. It's small enough to do that. You can run across the street and hand it to your friends. You can email it to your friends. My view is that it's like the Star Trek replicator. Somebody types in Tom Sawyer, and everybody else in every other portal on the Internet, literally a billion people, can have a copy tomorrow.
This is not just a cute idea. This is something that's important to do.
Well, it's only important if people read the books. Now, some of my friends say, well, it's very important just to have the books for reference. And that's true. You can look up the whitewashing the fence in Tom Sawyer and find it in 1 second. If your kids are doing book reports, they can find the stuff they need immediately. They can download the whole book in a couple seconds. They can find the passages they want and quote them into their paper instantaneously. And they can do research the entire works of Shakespeare in 5 different editions, or Dante, or Milton, or all the great authors.
Now, you've corralled some volunteers working with you now. It's certainly not a solo effort anymore.
Oh, I couldn't even say I did 1% of all the work. And we have thousands of people that have helped us over the years, and probably 1,500 at the moment. And we're going to do probably about 2 books a person this year. Those 1,500 people are going to turn out 3,000 and some books this year.
So these are people, they're all over the world, I take it.
Everywhere.
And are they still typing books in?
Some of them, when it's their favorite book and they want it's kind of an ultimate experience to actually type every word of your favorite book in. But more and more, the scanners are getting better and the OCR is getting better. 10 years ago, you could actually have a race to see who could do it faster because the scanners were so slow and so bad. But now you can scan several hundred books in a day with a really good scanner.
Volunteers who work on this, then, do they obtain equipment to work on this?
Some of them buy their own scanners. Some of them just mail us the books, and they say, here, send me the scans when we're done. You can look up distributed proofreaders and become one of those. And people log in and they proofread a page or two while they're waiting for somebody to come pick them up, while they're waiting for dinner to cook. It only takes a couple minutes to proofread one page. And we have each page done by 2 separate people to make sure that we get all the possible errors.
Considering it didn't exist, say, 20 or 30 years ago, how good is scanning technology right now?
Oh, I'd say it's 98 or 99. A lot of it depends on the book itself, the font they use, the color of paper they use. It gets a little tough when you're using books that have weathered a lot and the pages are yellow. Then you have to tweak with the brightness and contrast.
Do you foresee a time when proofreading will not be necessary?
Of course. I mean, obviously, 100 years from now, the world is going to be stood on its head several times over. And my vision of the future 100 years from now is you just rip the cover off a book and throw it in a bin, and literally it just, and the whole thing comes out on your disc, and it's done. And it's 99.9999% accurate.
Now, you know, there are people working in the field who are trying to sell books online, including public domain literature, but this is really not the point here.
No. I don't mind if you pay a dollar for a disc, if you charge your friend down the street a dollar to go give him a copy. But Project Gutenberg's a trademark, and like any other trademark, you can't sell things with our name on it without our permission. But our permission is given in advance if you do it for free. And a lot of what they call sneakernet, that's what we nickname this running across the street and giving things to your friends. So you count up all the people who are on the net, and I would love it if half the people that were listening right now would download a book or two and give it to somebody as a present. You can put it on a floppy that costs you a nickel or a dime, or you can put them on a CD that costs you a nickel or a dime, and just hand them a couple books and say, hey, this is for you, free.
Now, you're past the 8,000 mark. What sort of things are coming in right now? Are there still familiar books that haven't been put on Project Gutenberg?
Well, one thing we try to do every 1,000th book is to add a new language. We have about 20 languages that we've sampled in so far. But as far as the familiar books, I am always totally amazed. I look at our list of 50, 60, 70 books we do every month, and I see a dozen books, two dozen books, and I go, I can't believe we didn't do those already. There are plenty of books out there. We are hoping to do 1,000,000 books 10 years from this December. And maybe then I can tell you, well, we did a whole bunch this month and I didn't recognize too many of them.
How is this project being funded?
It pretty much isn't. It's 99.99% volunteers. And even I don't get paid some of the time, because I just say, hey, we're broke, don't pay me. It's easy to do. You can do this on any computer. You could do it on a 20-year-old computer, because text doesn't take the same kind of computer clicks as graphics does. When you've got a text file, it's very easy to send it, very easy to manipulate it, to put it into your word processor, email it around.
So this is this Project Gutenberg is living in computers, I guess, at various locations where people can
We probably have hundreds of locations around the world, maybe even thousands. We keep a little list of a couple dozen people that ask us to put us in the newsletter once in a while. And if you get our newsletter, which you can subscribe to right there at Gutenberg.net, or you can volunteer, you can make donations, you can ask for books. It's all there. It's just a real easy homepage to navigate through. And you can email me at heart@pobox.com if you have any questions, and I can send you lots of information.
Okay. That's Gutenberg.net. You're talking about getting to the 10,000 mark now. And what sort of pace? How many books are coming in? How often?
We're averaging between 63 and 64 books a week right now, which is about 280 a month. So we've got to crank it up just a little bit if we're going to make 10,000 on December 10th, which is our goal. We hit number 100, which was The Complete Works of Shakespeare, on December 10th, 1993. And we're hoping for December 10th, 2003, for our 1,000th book, which is going to be the Magna Carta in several different editions and several different languages.
And that'll be book 10,000, the Magna Carta?
Uh-huh.
And from there, what happens? I mean, that only takes care of 2003.
Well, when we hit 10,000, we'll be in the same spot compared to 1993 in 2003 as we were with 100. We had 100 then, we'll have 10,000 now. If we do the same growth rate for the next 10 years, that means I could hopefully walk in here on December 10th, 2013, and hand you a little box that would have 1,000,000 books in it instead of only 10,000. only 10,000. Doesn't that sound great?
What's been the most gratifying thing for you working all this time on Project Gutenberg?
I guess just the little notes I get. I get little notes in the email saying, hey, I just found Project Gutenberg, and this is great stuff. I love reading, and I found 5 books that I couldn't find at the bookstores in the library that I've been looking for forever. You get people that just tickles their fancy, and they just read and read and read, and they're so happy about it.
Well, let me make sure I give the web address correctly, gutenberg.net, Gutenberg with one T, B-E-R-G. We'll get you to Project Gutenberg, and that's where you can first access all of these books as much as you want, but it's also where you could learn how to be learn about possibly volunteering and working on the project yourself.
Right, and you can email me, Hart, H-A-R-T, at P-O-Box.com, and I'll send you all the details.
Michael Hart, thank you very much for talking with me about Project Gutenberg. That's Project Gutenberg at gutenberg.net, where the number of books online is past, I guess, in the 8,030-something range and growing.